This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Right after President Obama called for repeal of the 17-year-old law that prohibits gays from serving openly in the military, Secretary of Defense Robert Gates announced a year-long review study on what would happen if Don't Ask, Don't Tell goes away.
We will enter this examination with no preconceived views, but a recognition that this will represent a fundamental change in personnel policy, one that will require that we provide our commanders with the guidance and tools necessary to accomplish this transition successfully and with minimum disruption to the department's critical missions.
A lot of people heard that as when, not if. And while it's up to Congress to repeal the law, a great deal will depend on what they hear from officers and enlisted personnel. So today, we'd like to hear from those of you in uniform now or retired military. If we do away with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, what would change? Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, this year's crop of Super Bowl ads on the opinion page this week. You can email in your raves and rants now. That address is talk@npr.org. But first, a world without Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And we begin with retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis. He was part of the Army task force that studied this issue back in 1993. He's advised the Pentagon on it since. He's snowed in at his home in Virginia and joins us on the phone. Nice to have you with us today.
Well, thank you, Neil.
And what do you think would be the effect of repeal?
Well, I really see a number of issues here. Certainly, we would look at, you know, perhaps like we did in 93, at the indicators of whether or not unit cohesion would be hurt. We'd look at bonding. You know, that's trust and confidence. By denying someone or taking away their privacy, specifically, you know, if you tell someone that you're homosexual and or heterosexual takes offense to that and you force them to share a room together, what might the consequences be? That's something we looked at. We certainly looked at, Neil, you know, dealing with four sex groups. There were some tangible costs, we thought, because of billeting and birthing issues. And a 24/7 environment, that's pretty critical. We looked at the personnel policy issues, like Mr. Gates said at the hearing the other day, and whether or not are we going to have mandated training, as I suspect we will. What implications does this have on personnel evaluations? If you have a bad attitude about homosexuals in the military, what might the implications of that be? What about military communities, family housing for homosexuals that happen to be married under state laws? What about Diversity Day? What about civil union child custody issues? The issues that we looked at in 93, I think Mr. Gates and his working group need to revisit to make sure that they are still valid. Because if they are still valid, Neil, the law, which has very specific logical 15 findings, comes to the conclusion that homosexuality is incompatible with military service. And that logic, if in fact is validated by going to the field, talking to the men, the women, and their families, then we need to keep the ban as it is. If it's changed, then that's a different proposition.
Well, it was interesting. Admiral Mullen said, I've served with homosexuals in the Navy ever since I graduated from the Academy in 78, I think it was. Did you serve with people you knew to be homosexuals?
I served with people who I suspected were homosexual, Neil. And that's the problem with this. You know, I've never been a fan of the notion of don't ask, don't tell. The law I subscribe to, don't ask, don't tell, was a pretense. It forced homosexuals to pretend they weren't,
right,
and the military to pretend it doesn't care. Indeed, it did. And, of course, it was politics. But, yes, I think since the time of George Washington, who, you know, kicked out the first known homosexual during the Revolutionary War, all the way up to the present, we have had some, but we don't know how many. And the polls certainly are not scientific, so it's anyone's guess.
Does public opinion weigh into this? Because according to the opinion polls, it's gone from about 53% support for homosexuals to serve openly back in 1993 to something like 59% now.
Well, because we have such a specialized environment, a culture in the military, civil rights, compassion, individual fairness, or even public opinion polls should be trumped by what makes our military the most effective military it can be. And that's, I think, the gist of what Mr. Gates and the working group have to discover. If, in fact, our conclusions back in 93 are different than they are today, based upon the stark reality of what we're asking these young men and women to do in foreign places across the world, is different today than it was back then. I think the science hasn't changed. Certainly public opinion has, but we need to be very careful about, you know, messing with a volunteer force. These young men and women are going off to foreign fields being wounded and killed because for a variety of reasons. And if we upset that apple cart for any reason, and how tenuous it is, we need to be cognizant that this could lead to some very serious consequences, I think, for our country.
And, of course, you're aware, more aware than I am, probably. People said very much the same kinds of things about integrating the forces racially and about introducing women onto the battlefield. And, indeed, there are still laws that prevent women from being in combat units. Nevertheless, in Iraq, we've certainly seen where there's no delineated front, women have been killed and injured and taken part in combat.
Yeah, and I've heard those arguments many times. You know, race and sex are very different aspects of a person's identity, Neil. You know, when President Truman was dealing with the issue, he was dealing with the integration, not the changing exclusion. You see, it's faulty logic to use the example of moving from segregation like we had in the late 40s and early 50s to integration, just to justify the move from exclusion, which we have right now regarding homosexuals, to
You say it's exclusion, but it's not. Tens of thousands of people who are gay, we can disagree on the numbers, but thousands of people who are gay serve in the military right now.
They serve in the military, you're right, but they serve undercover. And I told you earlier, I don't particularly applaud that. I think it was a bad decision. But that was a distinction. And with regards to women, you know, there are, you know, some obvious reasons why we segregate, you know, teenage men and women in close settings. We don't force them to sleep next to each other. We don't force them to use the same shower facilities. And we do recognize, just like every parent in America who has teenagers, that there is sexual tension and that has consequences. Now, if you want to double that issue, then we have to deal with that reality. And that's something I think Mr. Gates and his team have to examine very closely, because if it has a serious impact on the trust and confidence that you have in a small team, and then in your leadership, then that's very important.
Colonel McGinnis, thanks very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Neil.
And we hope you can dig out. Thanks very much. Lieutenant Colonel retired Bob McGinnis joined us from his home in Northern Virginia, which, as you probably know, has been covered with snow. Let's get some callers in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Sherry's with us from Hampton, Virginia.
Hi, good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sherry.
I just wanted to say I am active duty Air Force, and I know a lot of homosexuals that are serving in the military. They are some of the hardest working, most valuable workers that we have, and I don't think it's fair at all that they have to live in subterfuge just because they've chosen to serve their country.
And would it be an easy transition, do you think?
No, I think it's going to be a very difficult transition, but I think it's high time, and I think it's the right transition. I do like the comparison of when we desegregated the forces, because there were obviously large factions of people that didn't agree with it, but they got on board. That's one of the great things about the military, is that decisions are made, and it is our responsibility to adopt those decisions.
The time is now, and if there's people who have difficulty accepting it, what about them?
I think that they will. There are plenty of things that people in the military disagree with that they do, because that's our job. I mean, you know, we serve in the military because we love our country. We may not agree with the administration, but it doesn't matter. I think our military should reflect our country, and our country includes people who are homosexuals. I'm an atheist, and until very recently, I didn't feel comfortable saying that around my colleagues. But now in the military, it's a climate of acceptance. Now, and I can say whatever I feel about my belief system, and there's mutual respect among my colleagues.
Sherry, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. And joining us now from a studio in Philadelphia is Congressman Joe Sestak, a Democrat from Pennsylvania, a retired three-star admiral in the Navy. And he got a lot of snow there in Philadelphia, too. And Congressman, thanks very much for taking the time to make your way into the studio.
Absolutely. And we do have it. And more to come.
More to come. Coming Tuesday, but that's tomorrow's problem. Same question I asked Colonel McGinnis. What do you think would be the effect of repeal?
I think this is going to be a very positive effect. It's going to help the military institution. We are losing good warriors right now in the midst of two wars. We cannot afford to lose them. You know, I had gone to war. I'd command an aircraft carrier battle group in the war in Afghanistan. And we knew by public surveys that a certain percentage of them were gay. How can one come home and say they don't deserve equal rights? And on board that aircraft carrier, there was 5,000 sailors. Their average age, 19 and a half. That generation doesn't even blink an eye if somebody's gay on the whole. This is something that, as I questioned Secretary Gates at the hearing in the House Armed Services Committee the other day, I almost wonder why it really even takes a year to study its implementation. Because as Admiral Mullen said, we're forcing someone to live a lie. That harms the institution that's asking him to lie, or her.
We have an email from a commander in the Navy. This is named Louis. This is a huge mistake, he writes. It affects only a small portion of our service members. There is no, nor has there ever been, any right to serve in the military. We're an all-volunteer force now, but even when the draft was in effect, the military itself always reserved the right to accept only those that meet the requirements to serve.
But who sets those requirements? Men, and yet, or women, in the laws of our nation. And we're not we basically take our direction from the Constitution and from the Declaration of Independence, where all men are created equal. We worked our way through the African American experience. I put a woman into combat in an F-18 the night I arrived off Afghanistan. There's no reason we aren't going to work our way through this fairly rapidly with good commanders who understand, and their men and women understand, about good order and discipline. This is not an issue we can't move rapidly onward with.
Congressman Joe Sestak with us from Philadelphia. Coming up, more of your calls. If you've served in the military, or if you're serving now, how would that military change if Don't Ask, Don't Tell goes away? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Last week, the nation's top uniformed officer and the Secretary of Defense both told members of the Senate Armed Services Committee that Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the law that prohibits gay men and women from serving openly in the military, should be repealed. Today, we're talking about if and how the military might change if that law goes away. We're still talking with Congressman Joe Sestak, a former Navy admiral. If you're in uniform or if you're retired military, tell us what you think. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And let's get Daryl on the line. Daryl's calling us from Nashville.
Hey, Neil. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you.
I appreciate you taking my call. I think I agree and disagree with the previous callers. You know, I've served with a lot of men and women who were homosexual and were great leaders, were great soldiers, and did their jobs with honor and valor. But at the same time, you have to look at the different incidences with all the other stressors that are involved. And say, for instance, a light fighter infantry unit. You know, just ones I've heard of where soldiers have had pencils shoved through their ears, have been violated in a number of different ways. I think those are all things that you have to look at.
When you say soldiers had pencils shoved through their ears, these are soldiers who were believed by their colleagues to be gay?
Oh, yes, sir.
And pencils shoved through their ears so they would make them leave the unit?
Well, he pretty much left live with that incident.
Ah, I see. So fragging, if you will.
In a sense.
Congressman Sestak, let me ask you about that. He's talking about an extreme form of intolerance.
Well, let me tell you about a similar incident. There was a young petty officer 3 years ago in the United States Navy who was, people thought, were gay, his seniors. So they handcuffed him, dragged him through dog feces, and then threw him into a dog kennel. in Bahrain where there were dog hunting dog units. There was a report for discipline about it that never got acted upon. It came to my attention. I gave it to the chief of naval operation who investigated it, fired the chief petty officer from the Navy and disciplined the three-star admiral. My point is this. We had asked that gentleman to live a lie, and so therefore he was taken unduly advantage of. You know, African Americans weren't permitted to even serve in an integrated way, and yet, you know, we treat them equally, and their good order and discipline maintains that type of good order and discipline. If this fragging incident happened, it was because, quite frankly, it may have been helped by that we forced people to live a lie. That sailor I talked about was taken undue advantage just because the commander, in a sense, could not go to the commander to say, I'm gay, because he was being persecuted again. So that's why you don't want to force people to live a lie. And are they good? The gentleman who just called in said they were good. Why don't we want the best?
Hmm. Daryl, any response to that?
I believe that, you know, like the gentleman saying, you know, some of those soldiers are the best, but you have to look at the other soldiers that are extremely uncomfortable, you know, taking showers, sleeping next to homosexual individuals. Hmm. On the battlefield, all that changes. There's no color. There's no segregation. You're all there for a common bond. But when the mission's over and you go back home and you have this homosexual who is blatant and open with his views and his ideas and his sexuality, that's going to cause a extreme amount of tension, an extreme amount of stress, and
Daryl,
I think inevitably be a bad idea.
Daryl, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. Go ahead, Congressman.
Just one comment. We, in a sense, I don't think people out there, when you're in combat, as the gentleman Daryl just said, it really matters. But when we come home, and if there is this stress here, we don't take it out on someone when you go into a gym somewhere and just to work out, and we know a certain percentage are gay. And in the other ways, other issue is if someone is doing this at home and focusing upon someone because they're gay, that should be a hate crime. And that's what we are about in this nation. Everyone created equal. Well, I appreciate his points, and I thought he was quite frank about it in a helpful way. That's exactly what we don't want to do, is side on the side of people that are actually discriminate.
Here's an email I was wondering if I'd get a response from you about from Ann in San Antonio. Don't you think the problem, quote-unquote, in the military is not with homosexual soldiers but with intolerant attitudes found among the rank and file, not to mention officers? There will be need to education seminars and a very strict no-tolerance policy on anti-gay behavior. I think that was what you were just talking about.
I think if someone were to really go, at least on the crews I was associated with, one would be taken with how thoughtful and intelligent the military are. Our enlisted, the backbone of our service, are exceptionally a bright group of men and women. Almost on the whole, they're graduates of high school. And I think there is some intolerance. But I think you have seen a generation of leadership that has passed on from 1993 when the lieutenant colonel was working on that initial study, much like society's elder generations potentially growing up in different types of templates of how to think about others has moved on. And so on the whole, I think you're going to find quite a bit of tolerance out there. Will there be a segment, as there was when we integrated African Americans? Absolutely. But I do like the woman's comment that said, we are a reflection of society, a society we serve. And if we are absolutely different than them, how well can we appreciate that society that we serve in the military?
Congressman Sestak, thanks very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And good luck traveling in the snow.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Congressman Sestak, a retired Navy admiral, joined us from a studio in Philadelphia. This email from Blake in San Antonio. I was in the Army in the 1960s at the age of 19 and served with several gay soldiers in all my units. It wasn't a problem, even though I was hit on numerous times by gay soldiers. I am rabidly heterosexual and was not tempted to change that. The gay soldiers did their job just like the rest of us, and it was never a problem. Let's go next to Lisa. Lisa with us from Broken Arrow in Oklahoma.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I served in the Navy from 72. I retired in 93. I served with many who were gay. I knew they were gay. They were just sailors. The people who had a problem with them were those who were rabidly homophobic and were like, oh, my God, he's going to hit on me. And it's like, so? Just say no thank you. I was hit on by many, 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 many men, even though my husband is a retired Marine. And I saw no problem with somebody being hit on if they backed off when they were, you know,
When they heard no, yes. And do you think it would be a difficult transition given those people you describe as homophobic?
No. I think they should be treated just like anyone else who is harassing someone. You know, regardless, I was harassed because I was a woman in the military many times. I was discriminated against because I was a woman in the military. And the guys, and it was mostly men who did it, they could never understand why I had a problem with the discrimination. And so I think that, you know, throughout the years that I was in the military, I saw many changes. And I think this is a change that is way overdue.
Lisa, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Neil.
Joining us now is Bill McMichael, Pentagon correspondent for the Military Times newspapers. He was planned to join us here in the studio, but the subway station he uses is snowed in. That's at the Pentagon in Virginia. And nice to have you on the program today.
Thanks, Neil. Nice to be here.
And I wonder, you've done some reporting on this. How has the reaction been since we've heard from the President and the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs?
Well, we've been working on a package of stories in a poll for the last few months, and those results were just published today, as a matter of fact. And so we've got what we think is a unique poll, the first of its kind, that asks questions about orientation, living arrangement, and other social concerns. About 3,000-plus active duty or mobilized reserves who responded to that. And the answers are really across the board, but generally speaking, the attitudes appear to be changing overall on a very gradual decline basis from 2003 until this latest poll, showing that about 63% back in 2003 opposed repeal, and that's fallen down to 51% in this new poll that we've conducted. At the same time, those who favor repeal have increased over that time period, over that seven-year time period, from 24% to 30%, and there's another 20-odd percent that says it is neutral, or they say they decline to answer.
Okay, so 51%. But what's your margin of error on this poll?
I don't know that. I didn't do the poll side of it.
Okay.
I did the talking to the folks and interviews with the gay service members and other folks who agreed to talk with us.
So ultimately, it will be up to Congress to repeal this law if they will. But they're going to have to take into account what military leaders say. Is there a distinction, does the poll say, between officers and enlisted?
Actually, it's pretty close. It's surprising. The results are, if you look at age groups, for instance, age 18 to 29, about 30% favor, 51% oppose, and ages 30 and older, it's 30 and 52% respectively. So, and the services, they vary somewhat by service, I should say. You see the greatest number of folks who favor repeal in the Navy, followed closely by the Air Force. The greatest opposition, in the Marine Corps, and then the Army.
Over 30, by definition, you're either a senior non-com or an officer.
By definition, but yeah, pretty close to it, sure.
Pretty close to it, anyway.
That's our readership. Our readership is basically mid-grade NCOs and non-commissioned officers and officers.
So was this a scientifically conducted poll, or was this a poll of your readership?
This is a poll of our readership.
I see. So it's this, okay, that's could make a difference in terms of how you measure the overall military, but nevertheless, pretty interesting. So was there a question that if ordered, would you implement this policy?
The Well, that question was not asked. What I can tell you is, first off, anecdotally, without question, everyone I talked to in our focus groups and in one-on-one interviews said absolutely. I mean, even folks who are diametrically opposed to having gays in the military said, "Hey, you know, this is one lieutenant colonel told me, Marine lieutenant colonel. He says either you're all in or you're not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I will execute it to the best of my ability."
Here's an email, the question that we have from Kevin, who asks, how do our allies handle the issue of gays in the military?
Well, that is something that's a lot less of a concern in a number of NATO nations. I can't say that it's every NATO nation, but there are several. And off the top of my head, I'm not going to rattle them off for you here, in which gays serve openly and either.
I know they do, for example, in Israel, Canada, and Britain.
Mm-hmm. And everything I've read says there are no social issues there, that integration went fairly smoothly, and that it continues to this day not to be a huge social issue.
We're talking with Bill McMichael, Pentagon correspondent for Military Times newspapers, about the Don't Ask, Don't Tell issue. The president called for repeal. The Army, the military says it's going to take a year to study the issue. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go next to Thomas. Thomas with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm prior service in the Army as an airborne forward observer, and having served in a really close-knit, tight-bonded combat arms in the West, what I would really wonder is whether you want to break that bond, or could you allow gays and lesbians to serve in the military in a non-combat arms MOS and therefore not sacrifice the integrity of those combat MOSs?
So everybody would be asked if they were homosexual, and if they were, they would not be allowed to serve in frontline units?
Right, and perhaps allow them to serve in a support-type capacity so that you didn't sacrifice the integrity.
Interesting. Thomas, I have to ask, did you, when you were in that unit, did you know of anybody who was gay?
No, I did not. I don't know necessarily that it would have been accepted nor rejected. I was with a great group of guys, but at the same time, you're dealing with a clientele that is oftentimes not highly educated, typically very young, so they can be a little rash.
Yeah, and so you're saying, in other words, you would have to ask and tell. It would be a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They would have to ask people if they were gay, and if they were, then they would be excluded from those frontline units.
Right.
Okay. Is that something, anecdotally, that Bill McMichael, do you think people would talk about?
I'm sure that they would. And in fact, we asked that question, and the result was that they would. I can't find that information right here. I haven't got it committed to memory. But go ahead.
All right. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Melissa. Melissa with us from Schofield Barracks in Hawaii.
Hi, how you doing, Neil?
I'm good, thanks.
I'm active duty Army, and there's been plenty. I'm a military police, so we're co-ed. There's been plenty of both gays and lesbians. The entire unit knew about it. This is in Iraq and back here in Hawaii, and it was no issue. I think the only issue would be how to treat the marriages. I think that will be a contentious issue that the military will have to struggle with.
And domestic partners. There are some states that, of course, allow homosexuals to marry, and, of course, there are other states that have civil unions as well.
Correct. Yeah, so I think that would be the most difficult issue. Otherwise, having them serve openly, it's already happening. And I think one of your callers mentioned for young people, it's really a non-issue, and it really is. I'd say for our military, almost collectively, it's just become a non-issue, and it's already happening. So anybody who thinks it isn't is just not in touch with what's going on right now.
And going back to that previous caller's point, do you think it would make a difference in frontline units?
Not at all. Not at all. It's happening already. And I think, you know, soldiers have a bond, and it supersedes race, gender, and sexuality.
Melissa, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Neil.
At least one caller we know is not having a problem with rain or snow at the moment. Anyway, and Bill McMichael, as you listen to these callers, she's suggesting the younger the people are, that the more tolerant they are. That's not the answer you got from your readership, which was pretty consistent with younger readers saying they were about the same as the older readers, too.
Yeah, it would seem that way. The general sense is that younger service members, younger people in America are more tolerant of homosexuality in general. And I think going to the idea of serving in combat, that's an interesting kind of contradiction that we found, because there seems to be less of a concern among folks as far as serving alongside of gays in sort of rearward units. They say, like, in combat service support units for intelligence and linguistics, there's more acceptance of the idea of serving alongside somebody who's gay, as long as they're competent, as long as they can do their job. But at the same time, while you might think that the concern might be greater in, say, a combat barracks situation in stateside, overseas, where folks are on the front line, what respondents tell us and what interviewees tell me is that I don't care as long as this person next to me has got my back.
And I'm afraid we're going to have to end it there. Bill McMichael, thanks very much for your time today. He's Pentagon correspondent for the Military Times newspapers. When we come back from a short break, we're going to look on the opinion page this week at the Super Bowl ads. This is NPR News.